It's the AmeriChicks with Kim Monsey.
Now, while this is all going on, I went through President Trump's speech and Chuck and Nancy's rebuttal.
The most important story.
The American people finally said enough, and that is why they elected Donald Trump.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Britain's version of Medicare for All is struggling with long waits for care.
And opinions and ideas that prepare you to tackle the day ahead.
Because ideas matter.
It's the AmeriChicks, dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Agree or disagree, let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson, and man, oh man, do we have a show planned for you today. I have in studio with me two of my favorite AmeriDudes, and Casper Stockham. Welcome.
Thank
it's great
you.
To have you here.
Good to be
Roger
here.
Bianco, it's great to have you here too.
Good morning, Kim.
Now, you both are part of the second best class ever in leadership program.
Oh, I think it was the first class.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Nothing before counted.
Yeah. So 2014, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, I am thrilled to have both of you in studio today. We are going to have a big show. Let me do a little bit of housekeeping, and then we're going to just jump right in here. But today we're going to be talking. I want to remind you, socialism is being romanticized these days. There is nothing social about socialism. Just ask the people of Venezuela. We must remember that socialism is force. And the big questions out there when you're looking at candidates or when you're looking at issues is freedom or force? Force or freedom? It's never compassionate to take others' rights, property, or freedom via force, whether with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable and overtaxation. And my frequent guest, Stephen Kessler, PhD, millennial, says, let's ask three questions when we're looking at things. Do you have any skin in the game? Are we bringing people up, or are we yanking them down? You felt good, but did you do good? And we've seen a real socialization and effort in transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. And so that's why we do this show, is so that we can make sure that we live as free people. And I want to say thank you to producer Steve, to the team, Zach, Patty, and Keith, for your support and good work. And to you, my listeners, each of you, you are treasured and you are valued, and thank you for listening. So today, our inspiration, you know, it's summertime and people are out on the golf course. So I thought, I'd see, what does Arnold Palmer have to say about a few things? You know, the great golfer. And he said, the most rewarding things you do in life are often the ones that look like they cannot be done.
Mm.
Again, the most rewarding things in life. Yeah. Are often the things that look like they cannot be done.
Yeah. If anyone looked at his swing, that was the big thing about Arnold Palmer, right? His swing looked like there's no way that could hit a ball as great as he did, and he did.
Yeah.
Wow. He was lived that every day.
Live that every day. So, okay, I've got a little joke. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Steve, are you ready? Okay.
Oh, you know, I live for this.
Okay. A young man with a few hours to spare one afternoon figures that if he hurries and plays very fast, he can get in 9 holes before he has to head home.
Mm.
As he is about to tee off, an old gentleman shuffles onto the tee and asks if he can join him. Although worried this will slow him up, the younger man says, of course. To his surprise, the old man plays quickly. He doesn't hit the ball very far, but it goes straight. Furthermore, the old man moves along without wasting any time.
Mm.
When they reach the 9th fairway, the young man is facing a tough shot. A large pine tree sits in front of his ball, directly between it and the green. After several minutes pondering how to hit the shot, the old man says, you know, when I was your age, I hit the ball right over that tree. With the challenge before him, the young man swings hard, hits the ball, watches it fly into the branches, rattle around, and land with a thud about a foot from where it started. Of course, says the old man, when I was your age, that tree was only about 3 feet tall.
Very good, very good.
Okay. Well, we have something very special going on today. As I mentioned, we have Casper Stockham in studio and Roger Bianco. Roger, in segments 3 and 4, we're going to be talking about property rights, in specific, the Kelo case. And many of you may remember that's the little pink house that was back in New London, Connecticut.
London, Connecticut, correct.
And it's a very interesting conversation. It's a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And property rights are inherent to the American idea.
Right.
The other great thing that is inherent to the American idea is that we have everyday citizens who care deeply about our country stepping up to run for office. So, Casper, do you have something to announce?
I do.
What is going on in your life?
So, for the past probably 5 months, I've been praying and thinking and watching what's going on in our political landscape. You know, as you know, I ran twice for Congress in Denver, mm-hmm. and we can talk about that in a second. But I actually live in Aurora. I've lived in Aurora for 16 years.
Okay.
And after the last election and up until now, I have not been happy with the way things have been going in CD6.
You think?
I mean, every day I feel like my constitutional rights are being attacked. And there's post after post that's going on talking about that. So I decided after all that I'm going to jump back in the race and I'm going to run in CD6 for Congress. And I'm going to run against Jason Crow.
Right.
And it's going to be a fight because it's going to be there's going to be a primary fight, but I'm up for that, and then there's going to be a general fight, and he needs to find something else to do.
Well, yes,
I can applaud that
one. This is very exciting. I really believe that third time is the charm. I mean, running for office as a regular person, novice.
Sure.
I mean, you really have to learn what's... I mean, you know what's going on now, Casper. Mm-hmm. You know how the game's played.
I know how the game is played.
Yeah. Question, though. Mm-hmm. You ran in Denver, but you lived in Aurora.
Yeah.
Explain that, because now this is the district that you live in.
Right.
So you probably need to get out in front of that and explain that to people how
Absolutely.
That works.
Yeah. So the first thing is, with a federal office, you do not have to live in the district to run. You have to live in a state, but you don't have to live in a district.
Okay.
So you can run in any district. I can run in CD 5 or 7 or whatever. But when you win, you have to live in there to serve. Mm. So you'd have to move into the district
okay.
to serve.
Okay.
That's the first thing. And we knew this in Denver, but I work in the community in Denver on a daily basis.
Right.
So even though I didn't live in Denver, I'm in Denver more than I'm home.
Got it. Okay.
So,
okay.
yeah.
So, and so, if you would have won, then you would have had to move into Denver at that time.
Had to move into Denver, yeah.
Okay.
And unlike my opponents at the time, I don't have unlimited resources to have several homes, and that's what they do normally. They just buy a home and rent it out and say they live there.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you had mentioned that you've been more and more uncomfortable with what is going on and that you don't feel that you are being represented.
Yeah.
Now, you're black.
Mm-hmm. See, now you don't... The secret's out.
but you know, explain that. You said that you don't feel, as I'm looking at your press release, that you said that for the over 60 years, the Democrat Party has exploited the black and Hispanic community because there's been a void in those communities of any real Republican Party presence as a balance.
Yeah.
So fulfilling a prior campaign promise, you said, I haven't left the community. So explain this.
Yeah. So when Mike Kaufman held the seat, he was in the community a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was a very hard worker.
He was a very hard worker, and I have to give him credit for that. He was in the community a lot. People in the community knew Mike Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them had met him and had talked to him before. With Jason Crow, he is also in the community, but he's not representing all of the community. See, Mike Kaufman represented the Republican side, and he was also in the community on the Democrat side.
Right.
With Jason Crow, he's only in the community on the Democrat side. He doesn't go to Republican meetings. He doesn't talk to Republicans. He doesn't get any of our input, because if he did, he'd stop violating the Constitution on a daily basis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kaufman did a lot of work with Hispanic community, I know, Korean
exactly.
community.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I think he learned Spanish over the past couple of years because of that, you know, and that's something to admire.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that Jason is not doing. He is not, he's not talking to all of us. He's only talking to his base, and he has special interest groups that, you know, that fund his campaign. He's talking to them, and he's placating to the base, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. What about policy? Mm-hmm. What would you say Jason is doing regarding policy?
He is he's a new face on the same old policies.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is new about Jason Crow other than him being new to that office.
Mm-hmm.
He's an former Army Ranger, which is
it's a big deal. That's a big deal.
It's a big deal, and you know, he jumps out of perfectly good airplanes. I don't understand that, but you know, but I admire him for that, and I respect him for that.
Absolutely.
But a lot of the things he's doing don't represent the oath of office that we took, and I served in the military as well in the Air Force, And we took an oath of office that I didn't just drop after I got out. I still maintain that. And when you get sworn in for Congress, you take a very similar oath of office. And we're supposed to be protecting the Constitution and the citizens in the country. But every time he goes to work, I feel like my rights are being are in danger.
Well, and, you know, this is a question that I can't quite understand. And that is that people that put their life on the line, like you served in the Air Force, Crowe served in the Army, that people that put their lives on the line to protect this country, but then come back and support policies that do not support our country.
Right.
And you're seeing this push towards socialization.
Right.
And social, and under the social system, there's elites and then there's the poor.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's one of the headlines that Patty had had on here regarding California.
Right.
Is now becoming, there's areas of California that are like a third world country.
Right.
And
right.
it's because of socialist policies.
Right.
And Jason, you're seeing this real pull towards that in the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen, Crowe is actually voting and supporting those kinds of policies.
Yeah. He supports those. And I follow him on Facebook now, as you can imagine. And just yesterday, he posted a interview he had with the KOA Morning folks. And he was excited about the fact that he wants the military in Iran to talk to the military in the U.S. To lessen the conflict between our countries.
What?
This is what the man said, and I'm like, well, that violates the Constitution because there's a reason why we have civilians running the military and not the military running the military.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The military do what the civilians tell them to do, and the head military person is the President of the United States. So for the military to talk to the military and sidestep or bypass the executive branch.
You mean the Constitution?
Is a violation of the Constitution.
That's right.
And a sitting congressman is a former Army Ranger.
That's scary, actually.
That's very scary. That just happened yesterday. There's like 10 different things that he's done recently. I'm like, I'm sorry. He's a nice guy, I'm sure, but Jason Crowe's got to go.
Well, did you just think that up? You've been working on that one. So, you know what, we're going to go to break. But when we come back, I'd like to hear about some more of these things that he's doing because, you know, you may like somebody, but what are their policies? We need to really be working on the issues.
Yeah.
And so Roger Bianco in studio, Casper Stock, and we're going to go to break. But before we do that, I tell you what. The Rockies did great in Arizona. They swept them, and then they went to L.A., and the Dodgers swept the Rockies. So the Rocks are going on to San Francisco tonight for a three-game stand, and they'll return home later this week to pick up where they left off with the Dodgers. Hopefully, being home will be a good thing for them. And the place to watch all these baseball games is Hooters. It's the spot to be this summer. Enjoy Hooters' beach-worthy seafood items like amazing fish tacos, delicious snow crab legs, and mouth-watering buffalo shrimp. I ordered that the last time the girls were over, and they loved it. So Hooters has plenty of ice-cold beer options to help cool you down as well. Now, they do have some lunch specials. You can dine in for those. They have 9 items for $9, 11 to 3 p.m., and there's 9 delicious menu items to choose from, like fish and shrimp tacos, salads, cheeseburger, Philly cheese steak, and, of course, boneless wings. So you can dine in for that. You can always get Hooters wings to go. And or you can have them delivered right to your front door. So for more information, visit HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. We'll be right back. We are first out with this news that Casper Stockham is running for Congress. And so we'll be right back with Roger Bianco and Casper Stockham.
All AmeriChicks sponsors are an exclusive partnership with the AmeriChicks and are not affiliated or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson and grow your business, contact Kim at AmeriChicks.com. That's AmeriChicks.com.
Social media is important to the AmeriChicks since it's an avenue we can utilize to hear from and speak to all of our friends. For those of you who enjoy listening to the show, we'd love to hear what's on your radar. follow us and talk to us at AmeriChicks Twitter and Facebook pages. Also, if you're a business owner who could benefit from some extra foot traffic from like-minded friends, consider advertising on the AmeriChicks radio show. Contact us at AmeriChicks.com or email Kim at AmeriChicks.com.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. And now introducing Vino and Veritas in Fort Collins at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks would like to thank Otto Fireguard for sponsoring this fascinating exploration of the U.S. Constitution. And sponsoring the new Vino and Veritas in Fort Collins, Kim Munson looks forward to celebrating U.S. Constitution Week in Grand Lake. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at AmeriChicks.com.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, agree or disagree. Let's have a conversation. I tell you what, that Charlie and that bumper music, if I say something, he gets it on there. I love it. Thank you so much. Very quickly, you heard the spot for Vino and Veritas. This is Vino and Veritas week. Tonight's Vino and Veritas at Jen Hewlin's Water's Edge Winery over in Centennial. We've got a couple of individual tickets left, so if you're interested, and if you're interested on any of this, just email me at AmeriChicks.com/Kim. Tomorrow night is going to be our very first Vino and Veritas up in Fort Collins. And then Sunday night, it will be Vino and Veritas in Castle Rock. Tell you what, this is rich. This is the Federalist Papers were written by Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and James Madison to make the case for the Constitution. We have in studio with me a couple of guys that actually really love the Constitution, Roger Bianco and Casper Stockham. Casper?
Yes.
You love the Constitution so much that you just announced that you are running for Congress.
Yes, ma'am.
And
yes,
you're
ma'am.
Against, you're going to challenge Jason Crow?
Eventually, yes. I have to get through the assembly in the primary. But
I guess I'm being presumptuous, huh?
It's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us then. Let's go through some other reasons why Jason Crow has to go.
All right. So the first one I've already kind of touched on, he's not really honoring his military and congressional oath of office, I don't believe. You know, that's my personal opinion. He's good at jumping out of planes, but not jumping into the district and community to help with criminal justice reform and empowerment. Nothing in his campaign nor in his current actions have supported criminal justice reform. That was pushed by the Republicans and Trump,
right?
And the Democrats kind of.
That's been something they kind of sounded like they wanted all these years.
Right, right. But they
were just
never
kidding.
They were just kidding. Never did it. He takes advantage of tragedies for political gain, like the STEM shooting.
Right.
When that STEM shooting happened, him and Bennett ran down there. They couldn't get down there fast enough, and the kids realized this. You know, kids are awesome. They realized this, and they walked out.
I know.
You know, and for any politician to take advantage of those things. Now, should he go? Absolutely. He should be go, and he should be...
acknowledge the tragedy.
Acknowledge the tragedy, mourn with them or whatever, but no political action should be spoken from the podium.
Mm-hmm.
He should be honoring the young man that gave his life and sacrificed his life to save his fellow students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they always seek out these tragedies to try to take advantage of them for political gain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's no different than any other Democrat, really. He does not know the difference between industry and individual when it comes to recognizing the Second Amendment. What I mean by that is he is excited about putting forth a bill or an amendment or act or whatever that would allow for people to sue a gun manufacturer if someone uses that gun, like a Smith & Wesson gun is used in it.
Oh, my crime. Gosh. That's
yeah.
a direct affront upon the Second Amendment.
Hello. That's right. Jason Crow has got to go.
Okay.
Because the gun manufacturer, as long as that gun works as advertised, then the gun manufacturer is not at fault when somebody uses that gun to shoot someone. Just like a car manufacturer is not at fault for somebody, you know, a hit-and-run accident or something like that.
Right.
What about if somebody... You know, killed somebody with a kitchen knife.
Exactly.
Should then that manufacturer be held accountable as well?
See, it,
Where does it stop?
Where does it stop?
Right. So this is a direct affront upon something that is in the Constitution, and that is for law-abiding citizens to be able to keep and bear arms.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So every time
you're going to protect the Second Amendment.
100%.
Okay. 100%.
Every time he goes to work, I'm like, oh my God, now what? What's happening today with my Second Amendment rights and my constitutional rights? He believes and supports the Green New Deal and socialism because he's not speaking out against those. His party brings them up all the time, and he just kind of rubber stamping it.
Uh-huh.
And the H.R. 1 bill that the Congress signed on a very partisan vote,
uh-huh,
of course, is not even getting to the Senate, and it's definitely not going to get to the president's desk.
Now, which one is H.R. 1?
H.R. 1 is this humongous socialist kind of bill. I don't have all the details with me,
okay,
but
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, H.R. 1 is the first one that they were excited to, you know, to vote on.
Okay,
and
I'll look that up.
It is, oh my God, it's horrible.
Okay. I did print off when Ocasio-Cortez presented the new Green Deal.
Right.
I actually immediately printed it off, so I have the original copy.
Oh, wow.
Aha,
yeah.
If you ever need that. So yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Awesome. So he wants to use military money to fight climate change, but not money to secure the border. Now, he was excited about this. He did a video right before he left D.C. for the last holiday. They spent 20-something hours in committee making sure that there was military money set aside for climate change, but also making sure there was no money for border security. Now, what he said was there's no money to separate children at the border. But the money that goes to ICE is not designated like, okay, well, children at the border, 10,000, and, you know, it's border security.
Yeah.
We need to make sure our men and women right on the front lines have the resources they need to protect our country.
Okay, Casper, just a quick question,
yes,
because you mentioned that Jason Crow does not represent everyone,
right,
in CD6. Mm-hmm. The Hispanics, this you know, there's the perception that this open border thing plays to the Hispanic vote.
Right.
But I was thinking about it yesterday. It's like, we're all, I mean, I'm so frustrated with putting us in these different groups. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be safe.
Yeah.
When I go, like, my church is not in my neighborhood, and I was, you know, driving past Colfax the other day. I'm like, I want to be safe.
Yeah.
You're Hispanic. You probably want to be safe.
I do.
You're black. You probably want to be safe. You're a woman. You're gay. Don't we all want to be safe?
Sure, sure. And what the other side does, very masterfully, I might add, is that they take an issue, and they dissect it in a way that it makes us look like that we are hateful people or whatever. Securing the border has nothing to do with racism. Has nothing to do with hating Mexicans or anything like that. It has to do with national sovereignty, right? Every sovereign country, including Mexico, by the way, has a border, right? They have a southern border, northern border, and so forth. So Hispanics we have to figure out a humane way to deal with the crisis. We have to figure out how to do it how to fix the legal side of it and have border security, which includes a wall, it includes a fence, it includes drones, it includes all those things, and it includes getting the individuals at the border, the ICE agents and so forth, getting them the resources they need to do their job. Right now, the Congress has cut the funds, causing a crisis at the border, and then they go to the border and say, see, they're not doing their job. Well, you didn't give them the money,
right,
to do their job.
Right.
You know? And the Hispanic community is in support of secure borders. But what they also are in support of is a humane way to deal with the people who are currently here. Right. If we let them in, right? And now they're here, and we let them loose in the country as well.
So perhaps there might be a situation where, you know, figuring out a work program and then a path to citizenship. It would have to be very long. It's no. I don't think it's fair.
They need to get in line.
Jump the line. OK,
exactly. They need to get in line behind the people that came legally from Mexico and from
other
countries as well, get in line, and then they need a sponsor. Like we used to do, I think it's still a law, but we just don't
Right.
You know, we don't enforce it.
So it means that if you come in, that it's not going to be the taxpayer that's paying this. That
right.
There's going to be a sponsor, which that incentivizes people to actually get going.
When you come in legally, you have to have a sponsor. Mm-hmm. When you come in illegally, then you need to get in line and get a sponsor so that you can become legal.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. We're just about out of time. How many more do you have there?
Oh, let me go through them real quickly. I'll skip that one. I'll skip that one. Oh no, the ICE. So he's attacking the ICE facility. And I think I saw a tweet from Nancy Pelosi saying the ICE is not to do things that don't represent our country. Well, they're a government agency. ICE doesn't operate independently of anybody. They are responsible and report to the government.
And to enforce laws.
Okay. They're there like the military, the police, and every other public servant. They don't do things independently of our country. They are doing things based upon the rules and regulations that are set up by our government.
Mm-hmm.
So if ISIS is doing something outside of that.
ISIS, not ISIS.
ICE.
ICE, right.
ICE. Yeah, okay.
ICE is. Okay, ICE. I got it.
If ICE is
got it.
doing anything inappropriate, they're a government agency.
So Nancy Pelosi, who is Speaker of the House, maybe she should figure out some laws to figure it out.
I'm thinking they should change the regulation.
Got it.
If you don't like how your agency is running, change it.
Yep. So, anything else, sir?
Yes. They can go to Casper for Colorado. It's the word for CasperForColorado.com.
Okay.
That's the website. They can go donate right now on the site. The donate button is active. I'm going to be on the media all day long talking to folks and getting folks excited. See, here's the thing. At the end of the day, we as Republicans have to get into the community. We have to do outreach in the community. There's nobody better, I don't believe, you know, and I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I'm in the community every day. I don't know any other Republican that's as active in the community as I am. So it's going to take somebody like myself to win back CD6.
Well, Casper Stockham, we wish you lots of great luck. Thank you also
Thank you.
For stepping up. That is Casper4Colorado.com, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And you heard it first here. I know that you're going to be out on the media all day today, but thank you for having us be the first one to be able to get this news out there.
You're welcome. It's a little early for me, but you know what?
It's great
it
to have you.
It.
Okay,
it was worth it. Thank you.
Very good. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Roger Bianco about the Kelo case. It was the Supreme Court case that was in the movie The Little Pink House. Before we do that, though, Jason McBride is on the line today. And Jason, how are you?
Oh, just wonderful. How are you, Kim?
Good morning. Good morning. And somebody had texted me something regarding Ocasio-Cortez. And that Amazon did not pay any federal income tax. And we had talked about it a few weeks ago, or probably a couple of months ago. But I wanted to just re-ask you about that.
Well, it was fake news then, and it's fake news now.
Okay, explain.
Well, this article you sent me, it was on Yahoo, which that's the first indication that it's probably fake news right there. It was back from February. And I was reading through it. I mean, I didn't go through the whole thing because, I mean, they're just making it up. Here's a guy from he's from, I lost it. I'm sorry,
Kim. That's okay.
He's from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, and he's going through the whole thing, and then he says, it's hard to know exactly what they're doing, says Steve Wamhoff, ITEP's director of federal tax policy. Now, this was all the way back in February before Amazon had even released their 10K that showed what they had done for the year, so they had no idea whether they had paid taxes or not. This said they weren't going to pay taxes in 2018. It said they paid zero taxes in 2017, and then went on a big, laundry list of manure that apparently they just made up from whole cloth. Now, as you remember, Kim, of course, Elizabeth Warren came in and latched onto this and started repeating it.
Well, and it seems like it must be getting some new legs because somebody had just sent this to me. So I don't know if they just had come up on it or, you know, if it was something out there. But you had actually looked at the real financials of Amazon and You said from, I think, what, your K1 or whatever, that they did pay federal income taxes.
Well, they did. And I just want to point out, Kim, anybody can look at this information. You just go to SEC.gov. Up at the top, you click company information. You put in Amazon symbol, and you look for what's called a 10K. That's their annual report. Well, for 2018, they did pay just a little bit of tax, a total of $1.2 billion in taxes. And in 2017, when this guy claimed that they paid zero taxes, well, they paid $957 million. I know that's not very much to the average person, but, you know, almost $1 billion. And by the way, in 2016, they also paid 400 and some million in taxes. So it's a fake story, and you can get the actual info very, very easily. It's right here in black and white, unless Amazon's just lying, which I find highly unlikely they would do in their 10K.
Right, that's for sure. So, Jason, I really appreciate you breaking this out again, because, you know, when you look at these different news sources, and you can prove, which you proved right here, that it is truly fake news, that it is dishonest, it's disingenuous. And so I would challenge people that when you hear something from these particular news sources, if you're not telling the truth here, why should I believe you over here? So, Jason, I really appreciate it. And you know, I know that you take this great care as well with, you know, with your clients and the folks over there at Presidential. You know, you help people with their nest eggs. So if people want more information, they can go to chickspresidential.com, chickspresidential.com. And, Jason, I know you'll sit down with people. There's no pressure or anything. That's not your style. But if people want to have another set of eyes on their nest egg, I know that you're happy to sit down and talk with them.
That's pretty much my job description, and yeah, absolutely. Give us a call, come over. We're not pressure place. We're not going to lock the door and make you write a check. It's very easy, very enjoyable, I would hope. And you know, the other thing, you come over, we're not a bunch of stiff suits either. It's not all tight. I mean, we're pretty easygoing, and most people have a lot of fun when they come to see us.
Well, that's for sure. So for more information, chickspresidential.com. Jason, thank you so much. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, Kim. Have a great show.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, I can't wait to talk with Roger Bianco regarding this Kelo case. We'll be right back.
Dan Predovich and his team at Predovich & Company help your business plan ahead financially. The Americhicks with Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company as your financial business consultant. Predovich & Company will take care of your tax preparation, bookkeeping, and business advisory services. Dan Predovich and his team want to learn the unique needs of your business through real, honest dialogue. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call 303-791-3000 to start preparing now for next year's tax season. Organize your business finances with Predovich & Company. Call 303-791-3000 today.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For over 30 years, entrepreneur, stylist, and Americhick Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game and freshen your look, email kim@americhicks.com for your initial style consult. kim@americhicks.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Americhicks with Kim Munson, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, agree or disagree. Let's have a conversation, and this is a important conversation. I have in studio with me Roger Bianco. He is a graduate of the Leadership Program of the Rockies class of 2014, and that's LPR for short. You were a Defender of Capitalism finalist. That's a big deal.
I was, yeah.
Big, big deal.
Didn't get the award, but I did get into the finals. Yeah.
Did you get a ribbon?
I don't think we did ribbons.
Yeah, I think the only person that gets the prize is the one that wins, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Steve DeRose, got to give credit. I think it was Steve DeRose that got Defenders of Capitalism for my class.
It's a big deal to be a finalist, because it is a group of 65 people that all have a great competitive spirit, if you will, and then also, you know, really trying to think about what capitalism is. So that's a big deal. You are the founder and co-chair of the LPR Mentor Program. You're a member of the LPR Advisory Council, and you are a former congressional staffer. So you kind of have a lot of experience. And property rights is something that, like, I mean, it makes you get really excited about it.
You got to die on this hill. We've got to die on this hill, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the Kelo case. Mm-hmm. And it was a movie a couple of years ago, The Little Pink House. So set it up for us.
Okay. So first thing, I almost started singing to Sweet Annie just reflexively because I love that song. That would have driven your ratings down through the floor.
Oh, you're also a musician.
Play the drums, but don't sing. But anyway, so the last time we got together, we talked about property rights and the American ideal, which involves property as something that is beyond your physical things. It's beyond your home, your land, your car, the things that you have that are tangible, mm-hmm. and you can touch, gets into your intellectual property, the things you think, the things you produce with your mind, as well as your religious freedom. And Madison was very particular in the late 18th century to write in his essay Property about that a man has particular or peculiar right in his religious expression, right? So that's what property is in the American ideal. Now, here comes Kelo. And I'll go through the history a little bit of how the Fifth Amendment has been interpreted, but here's Kelo.
Yeah, and it's Suzette Kelo.
Yeah, Suzette Kelo. So City of New London, Connecticut in 2000 approved a development plan which would involve eminent domain takings of over, actually, I think 90 properties. And 83 of them went along, quote-unquote, voluntarily, but not necessarily voluntarily. And 7 of them held out, including Suzette Kelo. Now, her and her family had lived in that home for generations. The fundamental issue here is whether the taking of the 7 contested properties, and really, I think, the whole all 90, is allowable under the, quote-unquote, public use takings clause of the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution as applied to the states through the 14th Amendment. So let's see if I can find it here. The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, double jeopardy, a lot of things in here. But the last line says, nor be deprived, no person shall be, yada, yada, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of the law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So those are the words at the crux of this, for public use. The Connecticut Supreme Court ruled that it was constitutional, that what the City of New London did was constitutional because the project would have created 1,000-plus jobs and would have revitalized that local community. So this kind of falls under the blanket of economic development, and many who have a broad interpretation of that public use clause say that's legitimate, that's constitutional. But many who do not have that broad interpretation believe that it was not constitutional. So what Suzette Kelo and her supporters did was they appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, the Supreme Court actually in June of 2005 upheld the Connecticut ruling by a 5-4 vote. So here we are, June of 2019. We're at the 15th anniversary mark of this decision. Mm-hmm. Now, here's just a note on this, and this is something that I looked at that I scratched my head about here a little bit. The court was, if I was looking at it right here, 7-2, Republican-appointed justices versus Democrat-appointed justices. 3 of those Republicans voted in the majority to expand eminent domain over economic development projects.
Okay, so now explain that one more time. So the vote was 7-2. It was O'Connor and
the vote was 5-4.
Oh, it was 5-4. Okay,
but it was so. Here's what it was. It was Breyer voted to uphold New London to vote
decision
against Kelo.
Okay, yeah.
Breyer, who was appointed by Clinton, Ginsburg, who was appointed by Clinton, Stevens, who was appointed by Republican Richard Nixon, Justice Kennedy, who was appointed by Ronald Reagan, and Justice Souter, who was appointed by George H.W. Bush. Those were the 5 that voted to uphold the decision that what the City of New London did in taking people's property was constitutional under the Fifth Amendment. Now, to overturn it, Rehnquist, Thomas, O'Connor, and Scalia, all appointed by Reagan, with the exception of Thomas, who was appointed by George H.W. Bush. Now, 2 points on this. One, all of those Republican presidents, Reagan, Nixon, I think, I wasn't alive when he first ran, but I was alive when he second ran, but I don't remember, and H.W. Bush, I'm sure all campaigned as appointing strict
constitutionalists
to the bench, and we cannot legislate from the bench, and so on and so forth. Constitutionalists, quote unquote, had an overwhelming majority on the Supreme Court, and they still expanded the public use clause under the Fifth Amendment to allow for essentially what you'll hear in the dissensions that I'll go through, cronyism. That's basically what this is. It's an allowance of cronyism under the Constitution and a devaluing of the very property rights that we talked about on the last show. So, and then the second thing was O'Connor's dissension, right? Her dissension, she had a reputation as somewhat of a moderate on the court. And her dissension adds credibility to the pushback, the movement that's since 2005 been pretty strong in pushing back against this Kelo decision. Because she's not, you know, I wouldn't call O'Connor a strict constitutionalist. And she came in weighing in favor of a limited interpretation of that public use clause. In other words, limiting the ability of governments to take people's property through eminent domain. And it really is that the just compensation part is not the issue. The issue is public use and what is that. And so there are a lot of implications, but...
Okay, now we're going to go to break here in just a minute, but you mentioned economic development. Mm-hmm. And we see so many politicians that tout, I was part of this deal that brought all these jobs to this community. But in doing so, typically that big business gets some kind of tax break, or they may get a kickback on the tax revenues.
Correct.
And so how, first of all, is that fair? That so they're saying if I don't have to adhere to so many rules and regulations, or if the taxes are lower, then I can do business in your community.
Right.
Well, duh, how about if there are not all these rules and regulations and for the little guy and you lower taxes for him or her?
Right.
How about that's a good idea? And so under this guise of economic development, they're bringing jobs to, quote unquote, our community. I remember... I want to say it was like VE Corp. There was an economic development deal that I think they brought them to Denver. But they're the parent company of manufactured socks, like in one of those smaller counties here in Colorado. I want to say it's up in Steamboat.
Okay.
And so those jobs were taken from Steamboat and brought over here.
Right.
And they were done via kind of cronyism.
Well, yeah. That's... There's a professor from George Mason University, Ilya Somin, S-O-M-I-N. If anyone wants to get caught up on this, he has a great lecture on YouTube called The Grasping Hand, Kelo versus New London and the Limits of Eminent Domain. Now, what he says along these lines is that the justification for economic development winds up being what this is. There's actually bipartisan opposition for property takings, but this is not necessarily a Republican versus Democrat issue. There's people on the left and the right who think that this kind of thing is wrong.
Okay,
what it is it's a, and this is the way that Justice O'Connor looks at it, a powerful moneyed interest versus the powerless. It's very difficult for people. Economic development's a wonderful thing, you know, and I think my personal opinion, if you say, I'll give you a tax break, or I'll cut your taxes for 5 years, or I'll cut the regulation, or I won't make you plant 50 trees, or whatever it is, you know, that's kind of an acknowledgement that that stuff is a block. It's something that prohibits economic development in your backyard. So why not just do away with that stuff permanently?
Uh-huh.
Kind of what's happening in the state of New York. But with Kelo... I'll go through, I know we got to take a break, but I'll go through O'Connor's dissenting opinion and Thomas's dissenting opinion, because they were fascinating, very well written, and that'll give more light on this thought, Kim, that you just brought up about how economic development. Professor Salmon says that something that was very interesting. He observed all these takings and what happened to these communities after. Found out, one, economic development is anemic. A lot of these projects don't happen. In fact, to my knowledge, to date, there's nothing been built on the
right.
land that, for the,
That's
in the
my
Kelo knowledge. Case.
That's my understanding.
He says that the feral cats are the ones that have gotten the most use out of all this, out of the takings there. And then he says, secondly, what happens is these dislocated people leave. And oftentimes what they do is they leave the city, they leave the community, they leave the congressional district. Just had Casper here. They leave the congressional district. They leave the state Senate district, whatever it is. So they can't, And the memories of everyone else is short, so there's no accountability. When it comes time to, quote-unquote, kick the bums out for kicking people out of their home, the memories of those people are either they're out of the district or the other citizens who stay just have a short memory, and people kind of get used to having a nice little quaint downtown area, even though Suzette Kilo got kicked out of her home unjustifiably.
Okay. So that sets it up. We're going to go to break. Roger Bianco is in studio. We're talking about property rights, Kilo, eminent domain, the Kilo case. We will be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect your private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Since losing her mother to breast cancer, Karen Levine has helped to organize a local fundraising event called Karen's for the Cure, raising money for breast cancer research. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson. So call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Come join the 88 Drive-In for all your favorite blockbuster movies. We're open 7 days a week. Admission is only $9 per person, and children under 12 are free. Friday, June 21st through Thursday, June 27th, features will include Toy Story 4, Godzilla, and Aladdin. And remember our popular Monday through Thursday pizza special. Get one 12-inch pizza served fresh and hot from our oven and two tall, cool 16-ounce sodas, all for only $12. Plus, now you can top it all off with our new sweet, crunchy churros and a steaming cup of hot chocolate. For more information, go to our Facebook page or visit our website at 88drivein.net.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, agree or disagree. Let's have a conversation. Thrilled to have in studio with me guest AmeriDude, Roger Bianco, LPR class of 2014, Defender of Capitalism finalist, founder and co-chair of the LPR Mentor Program. You're on the advisory council for LPR. You're a former congressional staffer. And you property rights, you said this is the hill that we have to die on.
Gotta die on this one because It goes deep. It goes deep and long. So talked about the Kilo case. And really, the first I had been exposed deeply to the Kilo case was in Leadership Program of the Rockies. They take a day and they talk about is it right to violate property rights or right to violate rights? And they discuss property rights. And then Dr. Tom Kranowitter expands property rights beyond the physical, which is what we've done here. So go to leadershipprogram.org to get information on that. The implications on this. And so there's actually a history. This has been, Professor Salmon in his talk says that a lot of legal scholars were actually surprised that the Supreme Court took the Kilo case because there's a long history of precedent. And it's actually, it illustrates nicely the move leftward, the move towards using government to do things like quote-unquote economic development. And as if, unless government doesn't do it, it won't get done, right? I mean, mm-hmm. If government doesn't do something, it doesn't mean it won't get done. I mean, the American people are industrious, and trusting them is a critical part of this. But so the public use is the idea, and there's a narrow interpretation of the Fifth Amendment, the public use clause versus public purpose, which is what Kilo expanded the definition to go from public use to public purpose. So what does that mean? Well, the narrow interpretation, which is use only if the public is, and this is what Thomas talked about in his dissension, is you can take property, the government can take property for public use only if it's used directly by the public or the military. And he has a long list, but utilities, military use, roads, so on and so forth, where truthfully everyone can use it, right? But public purpose, quote unquote, broadens the definition. And it means that anything that's used by, quote unquote, the public. I mean, we talked about this, I think, last show or two shows ago. Oftentimes what happens is people running for office who want to beat their chest about all they're going to do for citizens, they just use the word public. You know, they call it public education and public library, as if you insert the word public in something and all of a sudden it becomes virtuous. Therefore, that person, and then that translates to the person running for office should have all the power and they should get all the money and people and they should have the power to tax and all that stuff. Same thing here. Public use versus public purpose. Public purpose, is the broad interpretation in, of the Fifth Amendment. So, let's see, these types of takings, economic development. So the justification for public purpose is that the key behind these types of takings is that they create jobs, improved, quote-unquote, blighted communities, and are used by something called the public, even if only potentially, right? So they say that it doesn't actually have to materialize. Mm-hmm. Well, all the stuff that politicians say, and this is what O'Connor says in her dissension, she says, look, politicians can say whatever they want to say. Economic forecasts about what happens once you take these people's
right.
property, kick them out, those can not materialize, right? We shouldn't make decisions to violate property rights based on forecasts and the like.
O'Connor said that.
Mm-hmm. But development does not always occur, right? We talked about that in the Kelo case. To my knowledge, still no development on those properties. These communities are not always blighted. The public use clause of the Fifth Amendment, the broad interpretation of it, has been used in places like Las Vegas, Times Square. Last I checked, Times Square isn't hurting for commerce, and I would not call that a blighted community. Sometimes it's used for sports stadiums. There's the story of Dodger Stadium at Chavez Ravine. I won't go into it, but that was an eminent domain case where the city, I believe, of Los Angeles, could have been the county or I don't know what it was, kicked people out of their home just so that the Dodgers can. And I love Dodger Stadium. Been there. Mm-hmm. Love the magic that happened. That magic could have happened someplace else. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we needed to kick people out of their homes. Ironic. Not ironic. Tragic, actually. Professor Salmon says the people hurt most by these takings for quote-unquote public use under or public purpose under the broad interpretation are those who are the poorest, least connected, who are dislocated. They often move outside the community, and then again, they can't mm-hmm. vote the bums out, so mm-hmm. there's no accountability. Mm-hmm. So the broad interpretation of the Fifth Amendment public use takings actually broadens it for public purpose, which means you can take property. The Supreme Court in the Kelo case said it's okay for governments, constitutional for governments to take property to use for broad uses that may potentially at some point down the road possibly benefit, quote unquote, the public, which means, I guess, anyone who can afford it to use the facilities
well,
built there.
It's the assumption that, okay, so that this is going to bring jobs and jobs. These are going to bring people that's going to spend money in this particular town. And to take people's property, to really steal it, cronyism.
Right.
If you watch the movie, this was all done for political purposes. And Dr. Krannewitter has said that in politics, it doesn't matter what the results are.
Right.
Just matters what they say. So in this case, they actually went in and they bulldozed these people's
That's
homes.
That's right. That's right.
And they took them. And that has got to be... And they did it because they wanted this big company to come in.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, they took these homes. They dislocated these people. That company didn't come in.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Now, here's what... So it's Pfizer. Here's what Justice O'Connor said in her dissension, and then we should talk about maybe next time the narrow interpretation. Justice O'Connor and Thomas both smelled out some cronyism here. The actual organization that was responsible for the plan... An implementation of the plan was something called the New London Development Corporation, which is a private organization that O'Connor says does not really have a legitimate, it's not a government function, it's not a government organization, so it doesn't have legitimate power to use eminent domain. The project was going to benefit Pfizer, but it also had pet projects, including an Italian drama club. My last name ends in a vowel. Italians do not need a club to be dramatic. We are dramatic all the time. That's absolutely pet projects and, you know, taking care of a local constituency.
See, they do this so that they can get people to come and support it. Now, what you just mentioned is something that I was always very concerned on when I was on city council, and that is the term public-private partnership.
Right.
Typically, it is cronyism.
Yeah.
It is where the public official... The politician, the bureaucrats, the interested parties can then choose over here in the private sector, you know, who's going to get the deals. And if you think that a private company is going to come in and take on risk without some kind of a guarantee, you know, some astronomical risk. And I'm thinking about the I-36 project. They call it public-private partnership.
Right.
In essence, they're not going to take any risk that that they haven't actually figured out. Who ultimately is on the line is the taxpayer.
That's right. The taxpayer is on the line for the success or failure of the project, and they also lose their very property, right? And so there's a narrow interpretation mm-hmm. of the public use clause that does not broaden eminent domain usage to public purpose. Now, and while just really quickly, the intention under this interpretation, the intention of the founders was clearly to protect property rather than allow government to take it. Modern day takings are not up to the Fifth Amendment standard because that standard is public use, right? And we mentioned those mm-hmm. before. Justice Thomas in his dissent in the list, utility, military roads, etc. Takings today are, and this was something that was common throughout everything that I've read on this topic. Takings today are in reality, open quotes, taking from A to give to B for the benefit of B, which is usually a private moneyed interest. I would be hugely hypocritical if I didn't bring up that President Trump was a big real estate guy who made lots of big deals, and he called eminent domain a beautiful thing in the Republican primary.
We're gonna have to let that hang there, yeah. And you'll be back next month, right?
Yeah, loved it. We got lots to go through.
Okay, thank you so much, Roger Bianco. Our quote for today: Arnold Palmer. He says, "When you play by the rules, defy mental demons, overcome every challenge, and enjoy a walk in the country at the same time." That's being alive. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. No.